My message today is entitled, The Spirituality of Being a Heretic. Now, you know, at the core of each of us is a belief system. And it's around that belief system that a large part of our, well, that of our personal identity is formed. That reality, at least in part, well, that reality points to the relative success of fundamentalism in spirituality. You see, one of the real strengths of fundamentalism is that it provides a stable core belief system. It's much easier to believe you understand who you are and feel stable when your core belief system isn't fluctuating. For folks like liberals and progressives, this is a little more difficult because the walls around our core beliefs are less rigid and more willing to flex as new information presents itself, which means that we more frequently than fundamentalists are reshaping our understanding of who we are and how we relate to society, even if in small ways. And that's just not true for fundamentalists. The protective walls around their core belief systems are tall and very rigid, and with good reason. But you see, we have to keep in mind that these core beliefs are so much more than ideas or ideals. They are identification and identity. Who we understand ourselves to be is formed around them. When you challenge a specific belief, you're also, in part, challenging that person's understanding of who they are. The more fundamentalist their belief system, the more likely it is that you are questioning who they understand themselves to believe. Now, for fundamentalist Christians, it's even more complicated than that. In both direct and in subtle ways, they believe that their salvation, at least in part, is dependent upon being correct on issues of faith. Intellectualism, progressivism, on the other hand, sort of invites the constant assessment of the correctness of a person's belief systems. And that's sort of dangerous ground for a fundamentalist Christian. When you confront them on a particular belief, you're not only confronting them on an idea that they have held to more rigidly for a longer time than most other folks, but you're also confronting the very core of who they understand themselves to be. For them, it is those core beliefs upon which their salvation hangs in balance, at least in part. Questioning it doesn't just question the thought for them, but it puts into question a lifetime of holding on tightly to that thought, which, for them, puts into question where they will spend the rest of eternity. When you take all of that into consideration, it's really not surprising that most fundamentalist Christians react negatively or avoid altogether any intellectual questioning of their core belief systems. But for that matter, it's not surprising that fundamentalists of all camps, well, they tend to have a less than positive reaction to progressivism. They just want to be right. And the rest of us just sort of hope that we have figured out some small version of the truth. It's a subtle difference, but it's important. Now, here's the thing, though. I believe that the ability to objectively question your belief system, maybe particularly the things to which we've been told we must conform to, basically dogma, I believe the ability to objectively question your belief system is essential to having a healthy spirituality. Unfortunately, when you do that kind of thing out loud, you tend to be labeled a heretic. As a matter of fact, I've been called a heretic so many times that I decided to embrace it. So I wrote a blog series entitled taking on all of the essential Christian beliefs, and I just went ahead and titled it, This Collar Is Too Tight, Heresies from a Southern Minister. Now, here's the thing. Heresy isn't the virgin-sacrificing, devil-worshipping, religion-destroying thing that centuries of Inquisition and authoritarian brainwashing have taught us to believe. It seems to me we'd be better off understanding the word heresy by going back to the original Greek meaning of the word, which is translated literally as to choose or to go one's own way. Basically, heresy is a word that people tend to label other folks with when they are exercising free will, exercising their ability to choose. And for the reasons I mentioned as we began, fundamentalists tend to get all anxious and unhappy when someone else is exercising their ability to make choices for themselves. In fact, in the eyes of the more fundamentalist wing of many established religions, choosing your own way rather than blindly following the preset spiritual dictates is a horrendous crime and even grounds for persecution. The history of both Christianity and Islam stained with the blood of those tortured and killed because they committed the unforgivable sin of questioning the answers handed down by religious authority. What's so strange about all of this is that many of the religions that stand over and against mindful questioning today were founded by folks labeled as heretics and dangerous outlaws. Jesus was crucified for blasphemy. Muhammad was actually chased out of Mecca by assassins. Think of that irony. These men were all about questioning tradition and established forms of authority, which is exactly what the fundamentalists claiming to follow them hate. In reality, almost all religions were started because someone left an existing tradition and created their own. But instead of honoring their example, most of their followers turned their original perspectives into one form of dogma or another. Typically, then they use it in a way that requires folks to fall in line and conform. Exactly the opposite of what their founders would have wanted. This is not true, of course, for all spiritual practices. Buddhism, for example. Buddhism is a tradition that allows and encourages freedom. Lin Chi, a Chinese Buddhist teacher, once said, "If you encounter the Buddha, kill him." Kill him? Buddha? Really? I mean, sure, that's what folks did to Jesus, but really? Of course, Lin Chi wasn't really talking about a literal death. He was simply trying to teach a rejection of dogmatism that inevitably results once we put our teacher on a pedestal. So, precisely because Lin Chi loved Buddha, he warned people against turning him into an object of worship, which unfortunately is a warning that has gone somewhat unobserved by many Buddhists. On his own deathbed, Buddha said, "Do not accept what you hear by report. Do not accept tradition. Do not accept a statement because it is found in our books. Not because it's the saying of your teacher. Be lamps unto yourself." Similarly, one of the great teachers of Taoism, Chuang Tzu, wrote, "The torch of chaos and doubt, this is what the sage steers by." So the whole point here is that many of the greatest spiritual teachers stand over and against what we hear from many fundamentalist religious leaders who threaten sort of hellish punishments unless we obey their creeds and dogma. Sadly, many religious people have an irrational fear of questioning what they hold most sacred. And because they think that certain beliefs are desirable, they come up with sort of twisted rationalizations to justify those beliefs against any possible attack rather than just taking an honest look at them. I can't help but wonder that if they're not terrified by the thought that if they begin doubting their certainties or looking at them with a critical eye, the entire castle of values upon which they base their entire lives will come tumbling down. And because of it, they then try their hardest to avoid facing any facts that would force them to change their minds. And that course of non-action, of sticking unquestionably to their beliefs, may feel safe and reassuring, but ultimately it only hurts in the long run. The truth is that testing our most sacred values against differing opinions will not only strengthen us, but we really have nothing to lose by being open-minded. It's sort of a win-win situation. Think of it this way. If we test our most sacred values against all kinds of different opinions and options, two things can happen. One, we find out that all the other alternatives are not as effective as what we already have in the first place. So that's a win. It increases our self-confidence by reinforcing the feeling that we are, we're on the right track. Plus, when we engage in discussions with others who hold many different ideas, our perspectives and understandings about our own beliefs will be stronger and more effective because we've explored many of the counter-arguments and understandings where they fall short. And then the second one being, if instead we find out that our beliefs, they were not as good as we thought they were, and there are better alternatives available. That's when a great result will happen as well. It's another win because we now have a chance to correct our spiritual path and head towards a path that's better and more fulfilling to us. Now, in both cases, the positive outcome, they begin with questioning core beliefs, the very things that will cause us to be labeled heretics. In the end, untested beliefs are not a treasure which we should preserve, but rather they can be a cage from which we must escape. They keep us prisoners of our own opinions and prevent us from facing reality for what it is. As Nietzsche puts it, I am a man who wishes nothing more than daily to lose some reassuring belief, who seeks to find and finds his happiness in this daily greater liberation of the mind. Instead of thinking it must be a good belief because I believe it, we need to make the move to I believe it because I've discovered it to be the best belief for me in this moment with the knowledge that I have. When we do, we will be labeled heretics. But remember, in the truest understanding of the meaning of heretic is a person who is choosing to go their own way, which is part of the journey of self-discovery, which, as it turns out, is one of the essential pieces to a healthy spiritual life. So, I invite you to be a spiritual heretic, to embrace it, and discover the freedom of a wide open, inquisitive, spiritual life.